This is an exclusive presentation of WoWo 1190 AM and 107.5 FM, Unholstered.
Welcome back to this very special edition of Unholstered. My name is Kayla Blakesley. I am just one of your hosts here on Unholstered.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Sophia Rosales-Gatina. I'm a captain with the Fort Wayne Police Department, and welcome back to our show Unholstered.
If this is your first time tuning in, first of all, shame on you. Second of all, this show is all about telling and sharing the stories that don't often get told when it comes to law enforcement. I sit on the side of telling and sharing these stories. Sophia, obviously, on the side of local law enforcement. And I say, Sophia, that today is a special episode because we're dedicating the whole thing to procedural justice. And I know we've talked about procedural justice in the past. I went into it thinking it was going to be kind of a boring topic, watching paint dry kind of topic, but that couldn't have been further from the truth. We brought in DC Mitch McKinney to talk about procedural justice. We brought him back. We also have another special guest in the studio right now. He's actually my producer for the show that I host Monday through Fridays, the radio program that I host here in Fort Wayne, Indiana. And we brought Josh in as well because Josh took the procedural justice course with me last Friday. So we're talking all about it. But before Josh and I get into it, Sophia, before you get into it, I want to bring up Mitch, because you're the one who kind of had this idea of procedural justice, right, of this course?
Sure. It came to us actually from the Department of Justice in 2013 because our homicide rate got so high. And Chicago was running this program, and we went there to watch what was going on and bring that back to Fort Wayne and apply it here. So we've been doing it for 10 years now.
And it's an actual course. I think that's a little bit of a misconception maybe I had about it. And I didn't realize it was true, like, classroom course for about, 2 hours. And then you kind of go into the dojo, you can go into your firing range, it gets a little bit more hands-on. But I don't think I realized the extent of class. And then, Sophia, you were telling me you guys do this 4 times a year.
We do. We try to do it as much as possible, you know, on people's schedules and things, because it's so important to our community. It's important for our young people to get in and understand so we can bridge this divide we seem to have about citizens and police, especially our young men of color. So we bring them in. We work with Fort Wayne United to do that. Gregory Causey. And he brings identifies students and he brings them in. We talk to them. We put them through this course, and it's always remarkable at the beginning. You know, there nobody really wants to show up. I don't want to deal with the police. That's the kind of things we get. But by the end of the course, he does a nice survey, and it's very encouraging to see how much more open-minded. They might not be on our side, and that's okay. But at least they're holding us a little bit of space to get more information, more facts before they start making decisions or getting up in a dander, I should say.
Yeah. Sure. No, you know what, though? I think producer Josh and I actually observed that exact thing, because Josh, you and I both walked out of there, and one of the first things we said to each other were like, wow, these students, these kids were so involved and engaged. And at first, they weren't like that.
Yeah, I wondered what the response would be from the group, because when we first walked in, there people are in the lobby area, they're eating the pizza, and to me, it started to seem like this is like one of those after schools, like, hey, you know, I was a part of those in high school, you know, you get in trouble, you get assigned to an after school program, and it seems like these are the kids, you know
exactly.
What I mean, who don't want to be there. But then as you went on throughout the meetings, even in the 2 classroom sessions, you started to see some of the engagement from these kids, and it became very clear, these kids may have been there for that purpose, but they're getting something out of that, and you could see the light bulb start to click in their head.
Well, exactly. You know, we went into the classroom setting, and you notice everyone was like sitting in the back. You know, it's like none of the students that we were there with, because I think I'd say Josh and I were there with maybe about 25 students, give or take, and then their school administrators. And no one wanted to sit up front. No one really wanted to like be engaged and raise their hands in the beginning, but slowly and but surely, there was a ton of engagement and like eager engagement. Mm-hmm. A lot of the students wanted to volunteer. And I was surprised by that, but like pleasantly surprised by that. Is that how you see most of these classes go, Mitch?
Well, it is, because I made them move. They all wanted to sit together. And I'm like, nope, there has to be an adult in between you. Split yourselves up now or I'll do it for you. And I look at it like church. Everyone sit in the back.
Yeah.
You know, and I said, you might as well move up. We have a full class. And we packed that classroom. And you notice when I start teaching, I always jump off. I'm the first one to go that I don't allow questions during my session. You formulate your questions throughout the day because it has to be fast moving. The pace has to be very high because we have so much to put in into a 4-hour time frame, but they all get it. By the end of the day, they understand exactly what we're trying to get.
Because when you at first said that, like, no questions, I actually thought you were joking at first. Like, I was like, oh, he doesn't mean that. He wants engagement and he wants people to ask. And then I realized you were genuine.
Right.
But like you said near the end of it, it made sense because you're jam-packing so much information into just the 4 hours. And again, only 2 of those hours are really in that classroom setting.
Correct.
Before we kind of get into the nitty-gritty, because I really want to talk about my experience and producer Josh's, because I don't know if you even are aware of this, Mitch. I know that you are, Sophia. Josh's dad is a retired police officer with the South Bend Police Department.
Right on.
So I know his perspective and my perspective are probably very different. But who can take this course? Because I know there's been a lot of questions about that.
Right. So basically, it's more of a movement than it is a course. You know, when we do this 4-hour block, it's really especially for our young men of color, especially the high school age. And majority of these men are athletes at their schools. So they are leaders in their schools and they're heard when they go back to their schools. And we want whatever message they walk out of that room with is going to be their message. But we want them to have as much information as possible to be able to defeat some of these negative messages between police and young men of color. So anybody that wants to take can call, but we usually have a packed agenda and we already have people who are in line for this class. But if you get a hold of like Fort Wayne Community Schools, East Allen County Schools, get a hold of the administrators, they know how to contact me.
And tell them, hey, we want to see our students take this procedural
Correct.
Justice course, something to that effect.
Correct. And it's going to grow. Between our neighborhood associations, there's many different ways that we can do this, and not just the way we did it at the academy. There's so many aspects to this, and you will see it. We'll see it grow. People will start getting really busy.
Josh, what were your overall just takeaways from the day?
Yeah, so it's unique for me because, again, being the son of a cop, you know, and at one point in time, I grew up wanting to be my dad and wanted to be a cop. It wasn't until Ferguson 2016 when I was like, you know what, I actually want my kids to, you know that I'm going to come home and not have to worry. But I took a junior police academy when I was a youngster at my dad's police department, Mishawaka Police Department. It was a week-long thing. So it was a whole day event. You show up in the morning. You do some classwork stuff. They take you out. They show you the dispatch, how dispatch works. They take you to the EMS, and they show you how all that works. It felt like this was that on steroids. You know what I mean? Because now you have to see the advancements. I got a different perspective because, yeah, my dad kind of forced me to go do that. This time around, I chose to come and do this. And the information that was presented to us, I can't express this enough. In the classroom setting, the information that was presented, the stat lines too, they became air apparent. I love the one thing that you guys pointed out. We're not out here shooting people. And you guys brought up 2 years of information that were really telling where you had the officer involved shootings.
What you hear on a national level, I think sometimes it gets kind of blown up. And the media runs it. So it looks like it's happening like every single minute of every day. And, you know, the stats don't back that up.
Circling back around, though, from the impression, this is the stat lines that they brought up. It really showed that those kids didn't know that coming into this, right? And they came from having the impression that cops are bad. Cops are just here to do harm to us. Those numbers begin to peel back that onion layer and really show with stats, with cold concrete information, that this is different now. Maybe it's not what they've been told.
Where do you think, Mitch, because you're on the streets, you're the one talking to these kids, you serve in the same neighborhood you grew up in.
Right.
So where is this misconception coming from? Because Josh is right. I recall that 2011 stat, and it was like, you know, well over 100,000 shootings, but only 5 actually resulted in a police officer shooting said suspect for whatever reason. I mean, that is mind-blowing because the kids were throwing out numbers like 600, 1,000.
Right.
You know, they were throwing out some really wild numbers.
Right.
So where does that misconception come from?
You know, when you think about it, you have really 2 sources of your information when you're talking about police. Either you've dealt with us personally and you've seen it, or you're seeing it on Hollywood. And that's what you're going to have. That's where you're going to get enamored with it. Even when you talk about reality TV with cops and live PD, it's all edited. You know, life's not edited. And if it's something, that's why I draw everybody back to Fort Wayne. What are you seeing here? What do you have? I have the same notepad I've had for 10 years, and I'm still waiting for someone to write down an officer's name, an address, a date and time that I can go look up and see. Maybe they were afraid to report something. I'll look it up today and follow it through and find out. If we treated you poorly, we want to know. And no one has come up with that. And it might be something that they don't want to. Good. Then you condoned it. Mm-hmm. I can't help you if you condone it. But if we're not treating you right, we want to know. So the conception is, or the perception is, hey, what are you dealing with in your life with the Fort Wayne Police Department? That's all I can help you with.
I think for me, in terms of the classroom setting, Josh, taking away some of our biggest highlights from that, to meet with something that you actually said, Mitch, you said something to the effect of, and I feel like this can be applied in everyday life, not just for law enforcement interactions for folks, but in every aspect of life. But you said, are you listening to respond or are you listening to understand? And I don't know if that's a Mitch McKinney quote or if you read that somewhere or heard that somewhere, but it stuck with me to the point that I can obviously recall it.
Sure.
And I thought that was really impactful. Particularly from a law enforcement point of view, for obvious reason of what we're just talking about, these misconceptions.
Sure.
Are you just listening and hearing from police or what you see on TV just so you can quickly respond and have your bitey response or your attitude or whatever it might be? Or are you truly listening to understand our law enforcement officers? And what was so unique about this experience is in the beginning, I think, I don't want to speak for everyone there. Obviously, I would never do that. But I do think a lot of people probably went into it listening just so they could respond, right?
Right.
But then near the end of it, after we went through some of these scenarios, and we'll kind of get to some of that, I truly did feel like everyone was listening to understand. Mm-hmm. And what an incredible movement to happen in just like 4 hours.
Right.
You know,
right.
Like, I mean, that is really, I think, wildly impressive, especially with such young folks. We're talking, what, 14, 15, 16-year-old men?
Correct. And did you notice the administrators who were there? Notice how they changed as well, mm-hmm. because they weren't responding and they were sitting back, and the hallway conversations is what I listen to the most. When we're moving from one area to another, is to look at the adults and the kids start to really talk to one another about what's happening. And a couple of folks were mentioning they go to the same school. They were talking about, well, this just happened in the hallway when I was dealing with, you know, dot, 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 to hear them connect. And they take that with them when they leave. If you were noticing the parking lot afterwards, there were four or five or six different pods of people just standing there having conversations. I wish I was in each one of those conversations, because they did carry it from it, but they couldn't carry it to their cars and leave. They had to resolve it before they left the parking lot. So that's what's powerful about the program.
Wow. Yeah, and we engage with so many of these people there as administrators and that, you know, and they started thinking more broadly, too, because they were asking me about programming and, hey, can we do this? Is there something like this going on? I'm like, no. Then we had to differentiate between county and city police. This person lived in the county. I'm like, but if that's what you want, then approach your police department where you live and see if you can start something. I'm sure they would be glad to join you in something like this. So this is what we want to happen. We want to engage citizens, have them kind of be at the forefront of their own product here, and then bring us in to help deliver that. We can't make up all programming. We just simply don't have that kind of time. But if you have something that you want us involved in because you think it's important for us to have some kind of information out there that you think is important, then call us. We'll gladly try and make time for you. I mean, everybody's calling us now, so it's hard schedule-wise. But if it's something that we think we can be really beneficial at, we'll make that happen some way or somehow.
Because at the end of the day, just what this course is all about, you all have the same goal. You want to understand the community wants to understand you. And that's pretty much what this whole movement, class, whatever you want to call it, course, is really all about. So once producer Josh and I went from this classroom setting, which again, would you say about 2 hours maybe we're in there for?
Mm-hmm.
We moved down the hallway, which we were at the Public Safety Academy here on the south side of Fort Wayne, which, by the way, I had no idea that building was that huge.
That big building.
Very big.
I mean, it is. What a great facility yes. that we have here. I was so impressed with it. Anyhow, we moved down the hallway to the dojo. In fact, we're walking down the hallway and producer Josh is like, oh, no, I got a heart condition. I better not be getting volunteered or anything in there. but we moved down to the hallway. I did get volunteered for a moment in the dojo.
Voluntold,
exactly. Thank you, Sophia. That's exactly what happened. But it was a really great experience, not only for me, but again, the students, because now we were put in real life scenarios where we, the attendees, got to be the police officers. And then y'all acted as civilians, right. Whether that was a homeless person, someone in distress, right. Someone suffering from mental illness. There were a lot of different scenarios that y'all played out. And then we had to act as said police officers. And what made it so real We were in this dojo. We had to put on the safety goggles, the whole nine yards. I looked really attractive. You handed the volunteers, or in my case, voluntold, airsoft Glocks.
Mm-hmm.
And said you can fire them, and they shot. I mean, are they? What do you describe what they shoot? An airsoft pellet or a?
Had a simmunition weapon which fires a paint pellet. A suspect, if you will, had an airsoft, just a plastic BB.
Okay, gotcha. So mine was like a little bit more cool.
Correct.
Than gotcha.
Yeah, a
okay,
more
I just
cool.
wanted to like
yeah.
throw that out there.
Powder blue.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
But it was really a telling moment because I stood there and I had the airsoft gun on my hip in a holster, and the officer at the time who was pretending to be the suspect basically said, when would you fire when I have my gun here, and he shot me every single time,
right,
minus the last time, but only because I cheated. But in that moment you're like, whoa, because they are split second decisions.
Correct.
And it really gave us this perspective of how hard it is for you guys to decipher not only when to pull your firearm, but to then actually fire your firearm.
You know, we talk about imminent versus immediate threats. And with that weapon down at somebody's side, that is an immediate threat to us. And you saw how fast that mm-hmm. happens. And like the instructor said, when he moves, you move. And he moved in and he shot you.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
multiple times.
Right. And he kept moving to shoot you. And then a lot of times folks will second guess us when we have that weapon up and we have that weapon on target while we're speaking to somebody. You know, because the mantra of my day, all day, was with those kids, our goals are the same. We both want to go home.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Both want to go home. And that's our full mantra for the day.
And looking at the scenarios that happened there, too, and it gave the kids a real finite viewpoint of how fast those go. We were in the shooting range that followed after the dojo, and they had two police cars set up. Well, a police car set up, and then what would be like a traffic stop in that situation where the suspect car is in front, the cop car is behind. And they put those kids in different situations in those police cars where the first situation, the guy, it was an obvious ambush. He came out of the car and started firing.
The kid didn't even get out of the car.
Started
wasn't
firing.
Even quick enough to, yeah.
No.
But then two scenarios later on, that same person gets out of the car running with a cell phone. So, I mean, you want to talk about having to see with the bird's eye view of how fast that decision has to be, if that's a gun or if that's a phone.
I want to really stress that we don't make these scenarios up. These are things that happen in real life. So that yeah. ambush that you saw, that first one that you saw, was indicative of what happened down to Officer Chavanaz, right? He was ambushed by an AK-47, shot 36 times. Immediately, he didn't have time to draw his weapon, sitting inside his squad car. So those are real things that really happen right here in Indiana. The other one with the cell phone did happen. It happens a lot. And people's like, well, why would someone run with a cell phone? People do all sorts of things when they're in a panic. He was in a panic because his wife was pregnant.
Yeah.
He was running for the officer to help. He didn't really probably even realize he had a cell phone in his hand. So people do a lot of things.
And the officer did not draw his firearm. I just want to make that clear, too. That was, you know, in the scenario we did, the kid did draw his firearm.
Yeah, and I think he shot him.
Yes, he did.
Right. And at the end of that, people laughed, right? Mm-hmm. They laughed because he shot him and he only had a cell phone. But it's not a laughing matter when it happens in real life, because look at what we do to mm-hmm. officers when that happens.
We crucify them.
We crucify them mm-hmm. in the media, and they're no good, and they're never any good, and all cops are bad, and this is what they do. They just gun people down. That's what happens to us in real life. It's not a laughing matter. But at that point, people are embarrassed,
mm-hmm.
right? They're like, oh, you know, they feel like they've done something bad or feel dumb because they did that. So it's laughter is just kind of one of those, like, mechanisms that people mm-hmm. do. But in real life, it isn't a laughing matter, because our people are, you know, how badly do you think that person feels when that happens?
Well, I walked away from that, and I remember the officer saying, yeah, we have a split second to decide if that's a cell phone in your hand, a firearm, if it's a hairbrush, name some really odd objects. And I walked away thinking, well, dang, Sophia, Mitch, how do you differentiate if it's a firearm, a hairbrush, or a cell phone, or a thermos of coffee?
You know, you have to be ready on every traffic stop you make. You know, before you turn those lights on, you have to be ready. And the biggest thing we teach all of our recruits and retrain our officers is I want my boots on the ground first.
Mm-hmm.
And so if I'm watching what's happening, when I see that, it's time for me to move to the back of my car. It's time for me to find some cover. It's time for me to look around and see if there's places I can get to, put something between me and the assailant. Because even if they're running with a phone, I'll figure that out. But distance and timing is what's my friend.
Gotcha.
And I need to do that. And a moving target's hard to hit. So if they're trying trying to attack me and I'm moving, you know, it's going to be harder for them to hit me, and I can get to a place where I can turn and revert back to my training and take appropriate action if need be.
These are all just mindsets that we have. And, you know, when people look at us and like, why are you so, you know, why you're looking around all the time, this is, it's just what we're trained to do. And it unfortunately, it bleeds over into our personal lives. It just does. It's just who we become after a while. And some people really kind of take that as paranoia, but it's not. It's awareness. It's awareness all the time.
We had on an officer last week, and I asked about that same thing. I said, how are you not in this hyper state of just hyper vigilance all the time? Like, how are you not losing your mind all the time? And he said, there's a difference between being paranoid and being alert. And I thought that was a really, that stuck with me as well, that had an impact on me, that there is a difference, and that's how I believe you probably get through your day-to-day, Sophia, Mitch.
Yeah, and there are officers who suffer that paranoia, and those are the ones we have to pull aside and get into our peer support program and get them help, because at that point, it's gone above and beyond, and we need to get those officers help, because they're still good officers. They're just struggling right now with something that's probably happened on the job, so we need to really take care of our officers' mental health, and with peer support and the things that we're doing on our department, I think we're doing a fine job of that.
Can I ask you both something while we've got you here? I want to ask you something. You know, seeing the vantage point, I probably saw my dad do 50 traffic stops just from being in the passenger of his car, you know, picking me up on the weekends, taking me over to his house, you know, the happenstance. Probably can't get away with that nowadays, you know, but the part that I always held my breath, right, because you saw him kind of snap into his zone anytime he had to turn on the lights and make that traffic stop. But the part where I always held my breath, and I wonder if you guys hold your breath too a little bit, or if you get the butterflies, is that part where you pass the first part of the trunk and you're making your way and you get that first vantage point into the backseat of the driver's side. Do you guys, that's where I was always holding my breath, praying that like nothing ever happened to my dad. But do you guys get that feeling still? I mean, just the uncertainty, that's the hairs are standing up on your back at that point, right?
You know, and it's one of the things that I instruct is our stops program is from the time that I'm calling out that traffic stop, I'm watching, and my eyes are always front. You know, when I make a maneuver, I'm looking. I catch that person as fast as I can to see where their hands are, and that's all I need to look at. I say, hey, I need to see your hands up on the steering wheel, and you can see that from my, I can see that from my door. I need to see your hands on the steering wheel. If not, I know that's not where I need to be. I stay back at my car, and I bring them to me. Why don't you grab your license, your stuff, and come out, turn your car off, put it in park, bring yourself back to me. I want them out of their car, but I'm standing outside of my car when I do that.
Wow.
And then people are like, well, you need to just come on back here to me, and I'll have the traffic stop right there at my front tire.
Wow.
Yeah, it's everything for me. You know, the approach just around your surroundings of where you are, because ambush can happen anywhere, and even more so today than ever before.
Mm-hmm.
So it's part of that where you're like Mitch said, you know, I want to see hands. If I can see your hands, I know they're where they need to be, and they're not rummaging around. We also, before we even approach, it's like, are they making a bunch of movements in the car? Even on your final approach, before you turn on the lights, you can see people moving in their car. Even with tinted windows, unless they're like illegally tinted, you can still see with some lighting behind you. Where I work nights all the time, so it was really difficult to see. And you're reliant on your flashlight, and you're just, you know, by the grace of
God. Yeah, I never thought about night.
Yeah, and by the grace of God, you know, you just hope you're protected and hope your training. But I will say this. I have learned over the course of several years on this job that our training is just phenomenal here. They prepare you so well. Your field training officers prepare you well. And I'm lucky enough to work in a city where we have officers who are able to make backups. I don't know what it would be like in a rural setting where there's nobody around, but I'm thankful for everyone in our department that makes those backups, because I know I have someone just a moment away that will help me if I need it. And that, for me, is really comforting.
After going through the procedural justice course, Josh, and hearing what we've heard from Mitch and Sophia today, do you have different thoughts about your dad or feelings or a different perspective than me? Because, I mean, I walked away from it, and I think the first thing I actually said to you when we exited the Public Safety Academy, I said, man, I wished every single person could take this course. Whether you live in Fort Wayne, Indiana, or in Georgia, I feel like everyone needs to have this perspective, and it would do our society a lot of good. I know that's not possible, but boy, I wish it was. That was really my big takeaway, is just an even greater appreciation for our men and women in blue. But my mom, my dad, a family member is not a police officer. So did your perspective or anything change?
Well, I have a breath of fresh air because my dad's now writing grants for a police department down in Florida. So it's
yeah,
a little
retired.
Less like, haphazard that I have to worry about. However, though, I left away thinking, my goodness, my dad needs to drop what he's doing. He needs to be an instructor. This is what he needs to do with all of his years, 36 on the force and doing different things, DUI task force, a FACT team, a fatal alcohol crash team is where he went out to. But with all the training that he's had over 36 years, this is a great way. And it's going to take those next wave of officers, right? I'm walking out of there thinking that my dad could be a part of those next waves of officers that make sure that the next coppers, right, that come into our generation are doing things the right way. Because I have huge admiration for what Mitch McKinney here is doing and the whole Fort Wayne department. It's incredible. This program is a difference maker. You need to bust people in by the hundreds.
See, that's what I'm telling you. I agree. Let's get them in the parking lot.
Let's show these guys because it's a difference maker. It's right. Huge.
Are there other procedural justice? I know you said you kind of learned this one modeled after what you experienced in Chicago.
Right.
So are there other courses like this that other departments are doing across the country?
You know, with the stuff that I do with the Fraternal Order of Police, the media aspect I see a lot where they'll bring media personalities in and do scenario based like that. But it's really important to have the kids come in, have school administrators come in. And so the recruits will come in with community members here at the end of June. We put every recruit class for the last 10 years have gone through this, but they do it for almost 8 hours.
One more time before we wrap this up. You had mentioned earlier that a school or folks can get a hold of their school administrators to kind of get some students and kiddos involved if they want to try to, or even I believe local activists can get involved or members of the media. How can they reach out to learn more or pursue taking the course?
You know, if they send me an email at mitchell.mckinney@cityoffortwayne.org, I'll get back with them.
All right, that simple. Thank you for letting Josh and I attend. Josh and I are both pretty eager. We're like, yep, we'll do it. We'll be there. So thank you for letting us attend. If you've missed any previous episodes of Unholstered, particularly the one about procedural justice, it's called Procedural Justice is Sexy. That's right. That is our most downloaded.
Yes.
It truly ended up being, I think, the best topic so far that we've ever covered here on the show, which to my surprise, because I said I was about as excited as, you know, wet paint drying about the topic when I just didn't understand the gravity of
sure.
it. So I feel so blessed to have the opportunity to hang with you guys during that and bring producer Josh along as well so we could both experience it. So if you missed it, download the Unholstered podcast anywhere you can download a podcast. Your town, your team, your topics. This is Unholstered.
Thanks for listening to Unholstered. Be sure to subscribe to us on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you listen. And remember, you can listen every Saturday morning at 10:30 on WoWo 1190 and 107.5 FM.
Podcasts by Federated Media.